back into the Short Pour Saloon. My name is Joel Penfield. Just a quick intro for you today. We have two awesome interviews for you on this episode. I interviewed Colton Lovelace. He is the video coordinator for OSU Baseball, works a lot with the new technology in Oak Ridge Stadium. We profiled some players, talked about some of the technology, how the coaches use it, and his role with the team as a graduate assistant. And Philip recorded an interview last week, last Thursday, with Anna Beffer, our favorite Cowgirl soccer correspondent. She is the color commentator for FC Tulsa and for OSU Cowgirl soccer on ESPN+. Season's gone really well. The spring season has gone well for them. So Philip checks in with her and sees, you know, what she thinks about the season so far and how things are looking as we head towards the NCAA tournament here coming up here in May. We apologize for the delay on this episode. We recorded one last week, but I was dealing with some technical issues on my end. My audio really wasn't coming through like I wanted, so we scrapped it, unfortunately. We're going to find a way to get an episode out within the next few days, hopefully. We're kind of recapping basketball season. We had our thoughts on the Mike Boynton extension and Cade deciding to go pro, which unfortunately, like I said, my audio just didn't quite take the way I wanted to. It wasn't going to sound good for you guys. So I didn't want to put out bad content for you, but we'll have that hopefully out for you fairly soon, put a bow on the basketball season and dive headfirst into spring sports as we have done in bits and pieces during the end of the basketball season. And then we'll have a little bit of spring football as well. So there's still a lot to talk about. Really exciting. Before we get into that interview, with Anna Beffer, we have a sponsor for the podcast right now. We're really excited. This is the first time we get to do this live ad read, the whole deal. But I'm introducing our new sponsor, Homefield. They are a premium collegiate apparel brand that specializes in officially licensed apparel with vintage college designs. Now, the reason why I get to do this now, and we can't thank them enough for sponsoring our podcast, is because they have officially launched their OSU line on their site. Comes out today on April 8th. So if you listen to this, you go to homefieldapparel.com, you'll see the Oklahoma State line. It's such a cool site because they have so many different schools, ranging from your Power Five schools to smaller schools, just a really cool vintage and throwback logos for all of these schools. It's a very cool way to get into, you know, college sports in a different way and just collect some of these really cool shirts, like from Slippery Rock or San Diego State or Georgetown or Alabama, Auburn, Army. The list goes on. It's a really cool way to collect some of these college shirts. And now Oklahoma State finally is a part of the Homefield family, and they get their own line of shirts. Homefield digs through the archives to find unique OSU logos, mascots, etc. They create thoughtful designs for all of these schools. I have gotten, thankfully, Homefield has sent me and Philip and a few and Micah some free shirts with the OSU line. I haven't gotten it yet, but I'm really excited to see what it looks like when it gets here. I know I've gotten the chance to look at the line. I'm so excited for you guys to get to see it as well. Go to homefieldapparel.com, and when you purchase either your OSU shirt or any of the other fine shirts that they have on their website, use code CRFF at checkout for 15% off your first purchase. As I said, homefieldapparel.com, use promo code CRFF at checkout to get 15% off an awesome Homefield Apparel shirt. We are so excited that we finally get the OSU line on their website. Thank you once again to Homefield for sponsoring our podcast for at least the next little bit, and we'll see where it goes from there. Without further ado, we'll have an interview with Anna Beffer that Philip did, and then I'll be talking with Colton Lovelace right after. Hope you guys enjoy this episode as always. Be sure to like, rate, subscribe, all that good stuff, and we'll talk to you on the next one. Take care, everybody.
Very excited to have our good friend Anna Beffer back joining us today. Color commentary for the Cowgirls, color commentary for FC Tulsa. Anna, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Really excited to talk a little Cowgirl soccer again. And it's been a bit since we had you on. When last we had you on, the Cowgirls were just getting ready to start their spring schedule, a 6 or 7 game slate. I think everything getting kind of moved around because of COVID. And so far, so good. They are 5-0. kicked things off with a win over Little Rock 3-0, a couple of really big road wins over two teams in St. Louis and North Texas who at that point hadn't lost a match at home in quite some time. A big win over UTEP, and then of course I think where we want to start is this win on Saturday, the second Bedlam match, this one in Stillwater with a 2-0 win. What are your thoughts on the team after this Saturday's this nice Bedlam victory?
Yeah, well, I mean, as you mentioned, they started off the season, the second half of the season, really, really well. I caught Colin in the locker room before the Bedlam game, and he was just talking about how just incredible that win was against UNT for so many reasons, too. Away, just you mentioned they had, you know, their home record was just unbelievable, and to come in there and play a tough UNT team. Plots went out early with a red card. So really the script was written for it, for everything to go wrong. And Colin was just super proud of that group for kind of buckling down and finding a way to win in a tough, tough environment. So I think that almost kind of not was a turning point, but was kind of a point where I know if I was in that position where you really start to kind of feel and believe like, hey, we're really good. Like this, we can really do this thing and keep going. And I think that carried over into that Bedlam victory too, because I mean, those good teams, you know, not every game is perfect. Not every game goes to plan. And they definitely had their moments against OU where they looked really good. And then they had their moments where they were lacking in the final third or couldn't connect that final pass in the run of play, but they were able to in good areas and, you know, get two PKs as a result of it and convert. So I think that was huge. OU always plays them really tough, no matter really what either team's record is. We've talked about how Bedlam rivalries can really go either way, just with the emotions and everything involved. So I think that was obviously a huge win for them and sets them up really nicely as they head into TCU.
Yeah, obviously, for this Bedlam series, OSU winners of 4 in a row. They've won 8 of the last 10. There's a loss and a draw in there. And OSU has dominated this series. I know it's a close series, typically, decided by one or two goals, but OSU dominates the series overall, 29-9-3, which is really impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, going 2-0 this season, I know OU's not, there's a little down this year, but it did feel like a pretty close matchup as usual between the two teams.
Yeah, no, it did. I mean, I know I've said this before, but whenever you have those Bedlam games, just the in-state rivalry, just the bragging rights, all of it, all of the above, the emotions are high, and no matter what the record is, you come to play. And I think OU, really every game that they've played this year, I mean, their record doesn't show, but they've played each game tight. I mean, they played TCU really, really tight. They only lost to TCU by 2, and they had 2 quick goals. But really, for the most part, they played them really well. So they're not just rolling over and, you know, getting crushed by these teams. And that was heightened against OSU because, I mean, who wouldn't want to knock off, obviously, a rival, but then OSU was on, I think at that point, a 7-game win streak. So that's enough motivation for OU to come in and, you know, crash their party. So they came to play and they'll continue to, you know, to continue to play and play hard and the remainder of the season. But OSU showed up and did what they needed to do. And, you know, that's kind of the mentality that they've had is this whole year is, you know, sometimes you have to scrap out a win or maybe went on a couple set pieces or PKs or whatever you have to do. But I mean, OSU is kind of on fire in a sense where their mentality is right where it needs to be. And everyone's kind of clicking and the chemistry's right. And I think it's just kind of great heading into the home stretch of the season.
I want to go back talk about the two road victories. The first one back on March 6th over St. Louis on the road. Look, St. Louis was ranked at that point.
Right.
They were on a 25-game unbeaten streak at home. Mm-hmm. And this one coming down to overtime, a penalty kick by Grace Yoakum, who you'll hear us talk about again here in a minute. Mm-hmm. That was an incredibly close game.
Yeah.
And one that, I mean, look, one of the things I like about the non-football sports and the non-basketball, even basketball to some extent, is the teams that are really good aren't always your Power Five teams. St. Louis is a really solid program. I mean, this is this was a good team. They were, like I said, ranked. They were 5-0 at the time, and OSU went on the road in a really tight one and came away a victory. I think that one really impressed me because I don't know that I would say St. Louis it was as good as West Virginia and TCU in the Big 12 this year, but for OSU to come away with that win, I thought was really impressive.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And you're right. And even with these teams that, you know, the St. Louis's and the UNT's that have those just incredible home records, I mean, it's hard to play away no matter who it is, really. I mean, any player will tell you. And to go into an environment like that and really have to grind it out. And I know you said we're going to talk about Grace Yoakum, but she's come up huge multiple times throughout the season in tough moments, you know, PKs or game-winning goals. I think I'm going to butcher this stat, but I know as of last week, I think she was leading the NCAA in game-winning goals, which might get overlooked, but that, I mean, that says something just about her mentality and just the team overall. It's super impressive win at St. Louis because they were really good. And it was early in that kind of second half of the season too. So you're kind of trying to work out the kinks of taking off for, you know, a couple months and kind of getting back into the swing of things with practices and just the kind of shifting the mentality of the spring from exhibition games to, you know, these games really matter. So that was obviously really impressive. You're exactly right. And then to top it off with UNT as well and just the path they've been on. So they put together some really quality wins.
All right, the remain St. Louis has only lost their 9-1 so far this season. UNT, again, a back and forth game, one that the OSU didn't lead the entire time either. And we talked about St. Louis's streak. North Texas had an 18 game home winning streak. They hadn't lost in 54 matches. UNT is a good soccer program. OSU trailed at the half 2-1. And again, this time in double overtime, Grace Yoakum.
Yeah.
Game-winning goal.
Mm-hmm.
She's been fantastic and amazing. And we knew that she was, but I mean, she has come up huge in those two matches, you know, for a Cowgirl squad that continues to just really get big wins for them in big spots.
Yeah. No, she's, I mean, it's obviously you can see her stats, but she's just been outstanding. And I know this week we just talked to Colin a lot and talked to Karen too, just catching up on season and excited about the remaining games. And I know Colin said that she's grown so much since she's been on campus, which is hard to believe because she came on campus just firing at all cylinders. So for her to just keep getting better and better, but she's just reading the game really well. And she's, you know, kind of in that midfield, but she knows when to go and join the attack, and she's just really smart in her approach. And I mean, her scoring those game winning goals is not a coincidence. She's right place, right time. She has that winning mentality where she will do, you know, what she has to do for her team to get them to that next level. And they look to her for that, and they look to her for that energy and her fire. And you can tell by some of her celebrations, I mean, just her passion for the game. So she's definitely put on a show. And I mean, and we're talking about one player. OSU has, gosh, they have a ton of really just core key players this season that they can draw from, Grace being one of them. But yeah, I'm excited to see what she'll do against TCU and Notre Dame and kind of as the season closes out.
At this point, North Texas is 6-2. They've got one other loss there. They also lost to the Southern Miss, but again, good squad. It's a nice win there. So we fast forward to, there's two matches left on the road at TCU, a TCU squad that won the Big 12 this past fall, a TCU mm-hmm. squad that OSU had a 1-0 lead over at home late into the game.
Mm-hmm.
TCU tied it up late, got a quick score in overtime to get that win. It was a really disappointing game for OSU back in October, and now they'll head to Fort Worth this coming Saturday for an opportunity for revenge to maybe end things better than they did the last time these two teams matched up. I'm curious your perspective on the team OSU now versus then. We thought OSU could get that win. Obviously, I think TCU was better than either you or I really realized at the time. Right. I mean, this is still a good TCU squad. What do we think your real expectations for this Saturday?
I mean, I'm really excited for this game. And I mean, you mentioned it, TCU has such a good team this year, and that game in the fall left such a bad taste. And I mean, I know OSU fans, but definitely the players, because, you know, they have that standard that they've set and they know the caliber of players they have and what they're capable of. And I think that heading into this game, they're just mentally, they're all on the same page, and they know what it takes to, whether they all, you know, if someone has an off day, someone else steps up, they know what it takes to grind out close wins. and away games. You mentioned those two really big time away wins that they've had early on in the season. So they've proven to others and themselves that they can do that against tough teams. And TCU likes to play soccer. They like to have the ball on the ground. They like to keep possession. They're really well coached. And I think that OSU matches up well because you have players, you know, like Gabriella Coleman and Grace Yoakum and Olivia Dowell, and where they can play direct if they need to, but they like to play on the ground. They like to be creative and they like to combine. And I think that this is going to be a great matchup between the two teams because both like to play similar styles of soccer. And I think OSU is at a point right now in the season where they're playing with a lot of confidence. Whereas last season it was just, you know, it was really bizarre, just the whole COVID thing and kind of week to week. And it's still that way to some extent, but they've kind of settled into a rhythm. They're more familiar with their roles and they know what they need to do when they're used to, you know, one game a weekend and kind of the practice schedule. And I think that it's coming at a really great time for them. I feel good about it. I think they're going to do great.
TCU, like I mentioned, winning the Big 12 this year. Now, as far as the spring schedule goes for TCU, their first two games were canceled. They had one against Baylor and another against Texas State. Those are not played. TCU beating Oklahoma 2-0 as well, and they were off this past week. They have OSU and then road games at A&M and a home game against Notre Dame. Speaking of Notre Dame, we'll wrap on this. Anna, that is OSU's last game on the schedule, a big one on April 11th on Sunday at noon against Notre Dame. Now, look, I understand the Fighting Irish aren't what they normally are. They're 6-5 on the season. They're still a good squad. They're always a really good soccer program, but they're not what they normally are. Still, getting Notre Dame in Stillwater is a big opportunity for the Cowgirls. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that game coming up here in just a couple weeks?
Yeah, you're right. It's huge. I mean, you said it. Notre Dame, they're not doing well as historically they've done in the past, but they're still just a really, really solid team. And I think, you know, at that stage in the season, it doesn't matter who you're playing. OSU is going to be laser focused on getting that win, but it's hard to look ahead when you know, have TCU in front of you still. So I know Colin in the locker room and they're all just laser focused on that game because it's kind of one foot in front of the other, just with this season and two really, really good teams left on the schedule. But yeah, bringing Notre Dame to Stillwater is just big for the school, big for the program, and to host them, it will be a great game and, you know, something to definitely get up for. I mean, those are the types of games that, you know, as a young player, you dream of. You go to these schools, you want to play in these big games and play these big programs, and that's one of them. To host, you know, Notre Dame, a solid program is a big deal.
Yeah, like it's been a really good spring season for OSU. They've got two more matches to close this out. A perfect 7-0 stretch here would be really impressive. I mean, as we mentioned, you know, TCU's had games canceled. Notre Dame has had spring games canceled. OSU so far has not had to deal with that yet. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed that both this TCU and Notre Dame go.
Yeah.
Look, I think OSU is playing right now like we thought they would be playing in the fall. And they played well by the end of that fall stretch.
Mm-hmm.
That having the West Virginia, Baylor, TCU, Kansas run all in a row turned out to be really tough early in the season for them.
Right.
And I think that kind of bit them. But they're playing their best, and so I'm really excited for this Saturday's match against TCU. I'm really hopeful. That is on ESPN Plus. The Notre Dame match will be on ESPN Plus. Those are two great ways to hear Anna here as she calls the match for the Cowgirls. Anna, how has it been this season getting to call soccer?
Yeah, it's been super fun. I mean, selfishly, I wish we had more. I'm kind of bummed we only had OU and Notre Dame that were getting picked up, but. No, it's a blast. I love Mike. Super easy. We have a lot of fun doing it and the girls make it easy to talk about. And I always joke with Colin that it's such a fun gig because I can still be involved in OSU soccer and keep up with everything. And he doesn't yell at me anymore. So it's a win for both of us, but no, I'm excited for the Notre Dame game. That'll be huge. And we're looking forward to it.
Awesome. Obviously, whatever version of the NCAA tournament comes out, we're still not entirely sure what that's going to look like. But that'll start on April 23rd. So, Anna, thanks for joining us, and we'll make sure and get you back on. I have a pretty good feeling OSU will be participating in the postseason this year with their record so far at 11-2-1. you know, even depending upon what happens here, I feel pretty confident that mm-hmm. OSU will be playing some sort of postseason as far as the NCAA tournament goes. So I will get you back on once we know what that looks like. And everybody, again, if you've got ESPN Plus, this Saturday at 5 p.m., OSU-TCU. The following Sunday, April 11th at noon, OSU-Notre Dame. If you're not in Stillwater and can't make it to that match, if you can, go do so.
Yeah.
I would advise you to.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And joining me now is Colton Lovelace. He is the video coordinator for OSU baseball. He's a great Twitter follow, posts a lot of clips of pitching and some other highlights from games during the year, does a lot of work with a lot of technology in Oberate Stadium, and he's going to talk to us about his role in the season so far. How's it going, man?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining me. I'm really excited we have the opportunity. We talk a little bit, text and stuff during games, but actually get to kind of nerd out about baseball on this podcast. It's not something I get to do very often, so I'm pretty excited to kind of dive deep into how the season's gone so far.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. Not many people like to talk about the advanced numbers with me, too, so.
Yeah, that's kind of my jam, is getting into the numbers a little bit, because baseball is a game that's built around that, but there's so much more to it now, and so many peripheral numbers and technology that's helping drive the game forward. And really, you're kind of at the forefront of that for Oklahoma State baseball. You work a lot with Rapsodo and Edutronic stuff for pitching, which are like high speed cameras, for those that don't know, that in real time give you spin rate and velocity and all the, it goes super, super deep. And we're not going to go that far just for, sake of audio. But talk about what it's like working with that and how things have gone so far this season using that.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of power at your hands when you're using that. No, it's fun. I mean, the guys really like to use it. They text me or Hub's the real famous guy.
Hub, I love part. Hub. That's a good dude right there.
Yeah, he's a great dude. That's my guy. He's made the transition a lot easier over here. But no, like the guys will text us asking, hey, can you get Rapsodo set up for a pen today? We get the Edutronic out, Rob's gonna be out there, we'll have the laptop going, Rapsodo, me like on the iPad, and we'll split it going, double barrel. But yeah, the guys really, I think they've really taken to it. There's definitely some guys that when they get on it, they don't want to, they just want to get on their pin and get on the mound and go. But there definitely are some guys that are, they want to make sure that the Rapsodo's out there and they'll throw a pitch and they want to see their spin efficiency. And, they immediately start talking with Rob, if they're throwing something that's low in efficiency, Rob's right there to immediately start talking with them over, like what they're doing wrong, hand position, wrist position, like all that stuff. So, it's a great tool to have, and our guys are using it really well. And like I said, it's a lot of power in my hands when I'm using it.
Have you seen anybody, specifically the pitchers, and the pitchers have been awesome for Oklahoma State this year overall. There have been a lot of guys that you've seen the jump from last year to this year, even in a shortened year, you could see the jump. Is there anybody in your short time here that you've seen that from using that technology from, the first time you got here, around the winter to now, like who's progressed the most?
Definitely one that I know off the top of my head is Robleski. Robo's a big guy with that. He's texting me or Hub, whenever he's throwing his pin throughout the week. Like he really wants you to have that Rapsodo unit out there, to make sure he's, staying through the ball, on this curveball slider, making sure that all the numbers on that are what he wants it at. He's a really bright kid. And I think that from when I came in, his velo was a little higher back in the winter. Obviously he's starting and throwing a lot more innings now. But just him knowing that he has all that data there, and he's a super smart kid. And he's when him and Rob talk about all that stuff, he's almost driving the conversation because he knows all that stuff. He follows up with the the new trends and all that stuff. And he's definitely made the biggest leaps in terms of data and all that, and seeing that correlate to in game, and knowing that, he's got a high spin fastball. So he likes to, he's getting the strikeouts top of the zone, and his curveballs speaks for itself. I mean, it's really nasty.
Everything he throws flashes plus, especially the spin he gets at his fastball at the top of the zone. It's night, on a good day, he goes up to 95, but 90, 92, 93, but can spin that thing above the letters and get swings and misses consistently. I've talked to a couple of scouts that love his stuff, and the stuff play is like can play in the big leagues with a little more refinement. It's all about fastball command at this point. And if he can fine tune that and start putting, instead of kind of spraying his fastball all over the place, if he can get to, an average command guy, he's going to be a big league pitcher in some capacity for sure.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, he's working on it too a lot more. Actually, against West Virginia, I mean, people are going to see the five earned runs and all that stuff, but I thought his stuff actually was looking pretty good. The umpire was kind of squeezing him a little bit, but he was throwing his changeup a little more too, and that's something that he's been working on with Rob to kind of add in, is just to change the eye level and stuff of the hitter. And I think once he, like you said, fastball command, but when that changeup starts, he really gets a feel for that and getting out in front of it and getting through it. It's going to be a game changer too, to add on to the other pitches that are already super, super good.
So speaking of Rob Walton, what's it like to work with him, and his vast knowledge of the game and, all that he does, he's done for Oklahoma State pitchers before really even using a lot of this technology, which is pretty recent for him, as far as I know. He only started using TrackMan and, a couple of seasons ago. So what's it like working with him and, having your knowledge of, being a little more, technologically advanced and things like that, combined with his, newfound knowledge of this stuff and all of, his knowledge beyond that of just playing the game on the field?
Yeah, no, there's a reason why his nickname's the Wizard. I mean, he is unbelievable. I mean, honestly, he probably doesn't need all the technology stuff, because I mean, his there's a reason he wears glasses. No offense, Rob, but I mean, he's like everything he sees. I mean, you'll see a niche draw at camera. Guys, they're not getting straight behind their fastball. They'll look back at it and we'll have it ready for him to watch and everything. And he's already, telling somebody, you're not getting through it and all this stuff. Like, his eye is unbelievable. Everything, just being here since I got here in January, I've tried to learn from him as much as possible. I ask him a crap ton of questions. I mean, he's great. I mean, there's big league teams that have called in the off season asking, to make him minor league pitching coordinator and all that stuff, and and he's stayed here and for his love for Oklahoma State. There's a reason he's one of the top pitching coaches in the country. And another thing too is, I mean, he can, when we go into a series, he knows what city you were born in as a hitter. Like, I mean, it is unreal. Like, he knows how to pitch to a guy. I mean, he knows going in on Friday night how they're going to pitch you the third time through the order. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, I've never seen this before in my time being in college baseball. Just the preparation that goes into him preparing for a series and his knowledge of knowing just how to attack hitters, it's second to none.
Yeah, it's special to watch, especially when you see a guy just on, and you know that, I mean, Rob's the one pulling the strings, but, but there's so much preparation and work that goes into every single pitch for him and the hitter, or the pitcher and the catcher, to all be in sync and on the same page. And when it's clicking, which we've seen a couple of times this season with some of these starts, it's special.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny. I think it was either last week or the week before Justin was given his interview, Campbell, and, somebody asked him about, how he was feeling or something. And he kind of laughed and he's like, Rob, and he's like, it's all Rob. He's like, I just throw it where Rob tells me to throw it and what to throw. Like, pretty much, they're not really, like, they're kind of the puppet, but they're not. But it's Rob that's telling them, fastball on the way, change up. I love when we go change up, all that stuff. It's great.
Yes, I pitched in high school. Wasn't very good, but love just the mechanics of pitching and everything that goes into it, the chess game that it goes pitch to pitch. And I love trying to think about how they go. Whenever I see an OO change up, yes, I love it.
Yeah.
Well, especially JC, I didn't throw hard, so I had to pitch backwards to people because I was throwing all 77 from the left side. Like, I got to go change up early.
Yeah. No, that I would much rather watch somebody that, like Parker. Like, Parker's going to be 86, 88. The bullpen, he touched 91 the other night, which was awesome. But, you know, like just seeing somebody like him, like he's not going to blow you away with his fastball, but he has, I mean, you know, four seam, cutter, curve, you know, change up, like all this stuff. Like it's, as a hitter, that's the worst at bat. You know, you're going to get any of those four pitches in any count. I would much rather face somebody that's coming in throwing 98. You know that you're getting 98 than having Parker up there. And there's a reason why Parker's had the success this year that he's had.
Yeah, for sure. You're not a Friday starter in the Big 12 by accident. No. That means you're the guy. And
yeah.
Oklahoma State, I mean, and that's not a knock on Osmond or Robleski or Campbell, but Scott's been that dude for years now. And, you know, he's proven it this year. So you were – just give a little bit of background. So you were a student manager at KU, correct?
Yes, sir. From 2016 to 2020, I was a student manager for Coach Bryce with the Kansas baseball team. He brought me on. I'm from Lawrence, Kansas, went to Lawrence High. Born and raised a Jayhawk, sorry. But
I mean, I'm from that area. I get it.
Yeah, no, it was a great 4 years. I test everything I know, all the opportunities, you know, I was blessed that they spent the money on the Edgetronic camera, TrackMan, Rapsodo, Hit Tracks, Blast Motion, all this stuff for me to help or pretty much spearhead myself when I was there. And that's how I've gotten all the experience with all these different technologies. But everything I've learned, you know, Coach Bryce is a great guy and, you know, I would die for him.
Yeah. And that's so cool. And that's one thing that I wish I would have done is be a student manager or be around the program to get around some of that technology, because as much as I want to work in baseball, like you have leaps and bounds ahead of where I'm at, because you have all this access to the technology and you're around it, you know how to apply it. And, you know, you're going to go work, and you told me off air, you're going to go do an internship in the Appalachian League, doing all that video coordinator stuff. Like that's awesome. And I'm excited for you, dude. That's really, really cool. But what have you taken from, you know, is there anything that you've taken from your time at KU as a student manager, and now that you're a GA at OSU, is there anything you've taken to try and, you know, blend some of your experience and, you know, help move Oklahoma State forward in that regard?
Yeah. So the big thing when I came and interviewed with Josh in December is so there's a program, it's called BATS, all 30, you know, professional teams use it. Like all the minor league teams use it. Like most college teams use it. Oklahoma State had never used it before I got here. And when I interviewed with him, he asked if that was something that I could do. And I mean, I could do it pretty much with my eyes closed at this point. I've done it for 5 years now. But it's a video software that I ran at KU, and it's a four camera system. It goes off the center field camera, but there's a open face of the right-handed hitter, left-handed hitter, and then you put one behind home so you get like a field view, and it goes in, you know, I'll tag the game on a laptop during the game up in the press box, and then afterwards I trim it up, clip it up, and then spit it out. And it's a super good tool for, you know, people to analyze, you know, the pitchers to watch their, you know, it's like their pitches, you know, their game, their sequences, all that stuff. All the hitters to watch how their pitch, you know, their swings from the side, if they were feeling something that they didn't feel like they were doing well going into the game or after the game, like, you know, they can immediately go watch it. You know, I send it to them. That was the big thing with Josh coming over, that he wanted me to try and implement here. And I'm sure people have seen it. There's two little handheld tripods that go on top of each dugout. Those are mine. There's a center field camera that goes out next to the ESPN Plus feed. That's mine. And then I put one up on the very top of the stadium to angle down for a defense perspective. But that was the biggest thing from KU that I've definitely brought to the table at OSU. Helping hub with them and having the experience with, you know, the Edgetronic and the Rapsodo and all that was a big plus. One thing I got into my last 2 years at KU was making spreadsheets and databases and all that stuff for the coaching staff, and then how to, you know, easy ways to spit the information out to the players. I brought that over too. I've been doing those weekly, to give to the coaches to see all the advanced stats and stuff. So just stuff like that, you know, that I kind of got my feet wet at KU and solidifying that, you know, and I've got a really good system now. go 3 months in, you know, on how to do it in a timely manner and, you know, give it to the coaches in a good way.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm pretty familiar with the bat system. I spent a lot of time when I did my scouting internship in the 19 season, going to between Tulsa and Oklahoma City, spending time with the video coordinator for the Dodgers that was in Tulsa, and seeing that all those cameras hooked up combined with the TrackMan system all working together at the same time to see all that data in real time was so cool to be able to see that. And so I know when TrackMan moves over and you're actually able to get it in over it, which is the kind of the one knock on the stadium, beautiful stadium, the fact that you don't have TrackMan. One of my buddies is a director of analytics for K-State baseball. And there he goes, Joel, the stadium is awesome. There's no TrackMan. Like, yes, I know.
we heard it from him after the series. They were wanting all the data and stuff. And we're like, sorry, man, like $80 million stadium. Like it's the best in baseball, but
no TrackMan.
We do not have TrackMan, sadly.
All right, so let's talk about the season itself a little bit. 18-7-1 on the year. Kind of a weird roller coaster stretch for Oklahoma State where you start season 10-0-1, then you lose 6-8, and now you've won 6-7. You know, talk about what that's been like to kind of see the highs of the way the season began, then you drop a couple of series, and now you're starting to find the way again. Now, obviously, that stretch in the middle of the year was playing Vanderbilt and Texas Tech. Like, those are two of the best teams in the country, you know, two of the top five at least. So, you know, you're gonna take your lumps there, but then you come back, you sweep K-State, you take two or three from West Virginia. Things seem to start going back on track a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's been a roller coaster for sure. There's a reason why we play Vandy and have Tech after that. You know, that's Oklahoma State baseball. I mean, we're gonna be the toughest team in the country going into Big 12 tournament and regionals by the end of the year, just with the schedule we play. And I mean, even with adding UNCW this weekend, I mean, they're a super, super good team. We don't want to play the, teams that we know we're going to easily handle. You know, we want the best of the best. It showed. I mean, facing Kumar, facing Leiter, getting Texas Tech staff, Birdsell, Montgomery, the Sunday guy was up to 95 against us, which was a shock. But I mean, that was a good test. I'd rather have that happen in March like it did. Losing some tough games. That Missouri State game was tough. The team's really the last couple of weeks is we're really finding our stride. Nowhere near a finished product at all, which is a great thing. Just the mentality of the guys and coaching staff, it's been terrific. I mean, every day they come in, there's guys 2 hours, 3 hours before first pitch or practice time, they're in there working in the cages, they're out there getting infield work. I mean, it's the work ethic of this team, the want and the need of each guy, they want to succeed, they want to win a national title. I mean, it's second to none. I mean, you lose the game in Missouri State and I'm walking out and there's guys in there hitting in the cages after the loss. I mean, that just shows how, dedicated these guys are. And, they take those losses hard, but at the same time, I mean, the next day, that's the good thing about baseball. It's a new day. It's been tough. But we're still, still 18-7-1.
That one's still, there's no ties in baseball. Stop it. That bothered me to no end.
That was bad. The attitude in the locker room was not good after that.
I can't imagine why. Yeah. But that's always been the kind of the funny trend watching Josh Holiday coach teams is Oklahoma State. They usually start out the year well. There's some head scratchers in there. Some of those midweek games where it's like, how the heck do you lose to pick a mid-major school? And then right around this time of conference play, they're playing their best baseball, which is what you want to see leading into the conference tournament and regionals and supers. And I've said it all along, this is one of the top three teams in the Big 12. This is a team that's going to legitimately compete with TCU and Texas Tech for the conference title. And that's what we're seeing right now. They're still sitting third in the Big 12. They still have a big series with TCU coming up, but they're sitting really pretty right now. And a lot of guys are really hitting their stride. Pitching-wise, Justin Campbell, who I saw the other day, I didn't even realize it. is second in the entire country in ERA. It's sub one with Jack Leiter. Like, he's up there with Jack Leiter, folks.
Leiter
did to us and what he's doing in the SEC. Justin Campbell's been that good this year. Bryce Osmond's figuring out a little bit. Brett Stanley's been nails out of the bullpen. Christian Encarnacion Strand has been one of my favorite players in recent years. Watch Oklahoma State baseball, and he's just hot as all hell right now. 1.0-something OPS so far is just it's insane. Stupid. Nolan McClain, Brock Mathis, the list just goes on and on for guys. But where, how do you think they're shaping up right now? Am I pretty on track that I think they're really playing some of their best ball right now?
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, I think it's funny every time that Josh writes a lineup that, he gets the luxury of putting Brock in the eight hole. I mean, that's just stupid. I mean, I don't think there's any other Big 12 teams that have the depth we have, pitching and hitting, honestly. Yeah,
that's very true.
Bryce is, he's got a lot of expectations on him. I think he's done really well. Brett out of the bullpen, I mean, he's Brett. I mean, you know what he's getting? It's 26 strikeouts, 2 walks right now, high whip. I mean, it's stupid. And that's the fun thing, too, about these guys is, you could literally throw, of the 4 starters, they don't care where they're throwing. They don't care if they're the Tuesday guy. They don't care if they're the Friday guy. It's every game matters. And especially, I mean, good teams, great teams win midweeks too. That's a huge thing. And, people will knock on you like, you didn't move down to the midweek start or whatever. Like that's a super, super, super important game. Mm-hmm. And that's the good thing about this mentality of this team is, I mean, you could put Christian in the 9 hole and he's not going to complain. Like that's just how locked in they are right now, especially after these last 2 weeks, like you said. It's just the mentality's there. I mean, like I said, the work ethic's there. The right guys. I mean, there's a lot of fun stuff happening.
Yeah, it's such a fun team to watch. I was really excited coming into this year. You lost a couple of guys. The thing that sucks the most about this team, and it's not a knock on anybody on the field right now, but I wanted a full season of Caden Polkovich. We didn't get that last year. He was playing Big 12 Player of the Year caliber ball last year. He goes pro. Ben Leeper, who I've known for many years, but he was up to 98 out of the bullpen. He goes pro. But then I looked at it, was like, that it was nuts. But you look at around this roster, it's still incredibly veteran laden with guys like Carson McCusker. So glad he's back. Houston Morrill, when he went down for a little bit, then you get a guy like Matt Golda comes up. Nolan McClain really has solidified himself as a true freshman. Oh yeah. And he throws 97 off the mound. We haven't gotten to see that yet, but I'm excited for that. Campbell hits when they put him in the lineup. Cabanis has really impressed me a lot this year. It's still kind of tough lefty lefty, but he's one of the better defensive outfielders in all of college baseball. Got an absolute hose of an arm. And then it goes back to Encarnacion Strand. He's the guy in that lineup. When he comes up to the plate, you're expecting a 400-foot home run every time, which it's not going to happen to baseball, but he can drop diesel whenever he wants. I mean, hell, he went over the scoreboard against K-State, which is just absurd. You were sitting up
impressed. That's a regular occurrence in BP.
Oh my God, he's got to put on a show in BP. My goodness.
Yeah, him and Nolan are on the same group, so that's just
a fun BP group to watch. Oh yeah. But then Brock Mathis, who struggled a lot last year, at least offensively, completely different player this year, which I think has been one of the better pleasant surprises on the team so far. It's a lengthy lineup. I've said it all year. And the pitching staff, when they can find that right bridge to Stanley in the ninth inning, the game is over. It's just finding those guys. I think Cale Davis has been really good in spurts. Trevor Martin, to have a true freshman that you can bring in a high leverage situation. John Kelly's throwing, just frisbees up there. When Zach Cable's right, which we haven't seen a ton of this year, but when it's 98 with a plus split, like there's not much you can do with that at the college level. So there's a lot to like. I still firmly believe this team can compete for Omaha. It's just a matter of the right regional. And if they can host, then I feel really good about them at least getting to Supers and going from there. But with the way that things are rolling right now and the way they're playing the best ball, if they can beat TCU and take 2 or 3, this is a team that's going to probably – that can very well mess around and win the Big 12.
Oh, 100%, yeah. I mean, next weekend is not knocking their series against UNCW at all, but, I mean, next weekend is going to be a huge series. TCU's won 9 in a row. They just swept OU and Norman. they're a really good team. You know, Texas is a really good team. They just swept my Jayhawks. You know, Texas Tech. They had a tough one at K-State, but you know, it's this. Like I said earlier, and I'll stand by it too. I firmly believe that our depth is by far the best in the Big 12. I mean, the guys that even mentioned on the bullpen. I mean, Mitch Stone. Mitch has been huge out of the bullpen. You know, Colton Bowman. He's disgusting from a lefty.
That curveball is just it's so good.
Oh yeah, I mean it's plus it, you know, the spin rate on it, you know, the horizontal break on it is ridiculous when you see it on the wraps up and everything. But with guys like that, you know, that those they're all gonna they all know they have to they're gonna have to step up at some point. And they will when they get their moment. But just to know, and they haven't, you know, it's not really meshed together yet, but there's gonna be a time where it just all clicks. And you know, you'll get six innings, seven innings out of your starter, and you know, Rob's gonna turn and look through the bullpen and he has eight, nine options, you know, to go. Or I guess seven or eight, because you know Brett's going in the
ninth or in a high leverage like eighth inning. Yeah.
But it's ridiculous. And you know, just the lineup too. I mean, you know, Jackson Krull, when he's come in, you know, he hit a triple the night we lost on Friday night against West Virginia. But
that was cold off the bench, wasn't it? Was that a pinch hit opportunity?
That was a pinch hit, yeah. No, he's just scrappy, man. You're like, mm-hmm. Josh compares him to Brett Gardner, and it's a great comp for him. He just puts the ball in play. You know, he's a hell of a defender. But I mean, just guys like that, you know, like Golda's a plus defender. You can put him anywhere. Max is the jack of all trades. You know, he'll catch six innings and then he'll play two innings at short, and then he'll finish the ninth at second. You know, that's just – we expect that out of Max, and Max is going to give you that every time he goes out. But like I said, like, the expectation is to win the Big 12, and, you know, the depth is there. You know, the guys are – that's the scary part. I said earlier is, you know, this team hasn't fully clicked yet, mm-hmm. and we're still in the position that we're in right now.
Yeah, if there's one guy that I think is going to be really key for this team moving forward is Caden Trinkle, and he really struggled beginning of the year. That kid is so tooled up that I knew he was going to find a way to come around. He sat the first two games against Vandy, and then I think he went 8-for-17, you know, moving forward. And then he had the RBI knock against OU to win. When he's right, and if he's right at the top of that lineup, man, like, it just sets the table for everybody else. And when these guys start frenzy hitting, which they can do at times, you know, and you got anybody in that lineup can go bridge just about. I mean, hell, Houston Moore will hit a ball out, but I don't know, the wind had to have been blowing about 40 miles an hour out to everywhere in the outfield during that game on the Saturday. But when you got guys, when you got a guy, any guy 1-9 that can get you a knock or go bridge or take a walk, which these guys are so good, they're so disciplined. I feel so good about where this team is at. And that's why I haven't been worried. You're going to drop a game here or there. It's just baseball. It's the way things go. Like, even Vanderbilt, Arkansas, they lose games. Like, it happens. You know, heck, like I said, K-State, who I don't think is that great, they took 2-3 from Texas Tech. So that's the kind of stuff that can happen throughout the year. But when you're playing your best ball at the end of the year, then you're setting yourself up really nicely, and that's what I think this team can do. Colton, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for letting me nerd out about baseball a little bit. I know you appreciate it as well. But we'll have to do this again sometime soon. Hopefully right around regionals, we'll have to do it again. But for those that maybe don't follow you, follow what you're doing, like all the videos you post and stuff, where can they do that?
Yeah, so my Twitter, it's Colton_Lovelace without an E at the end. That's my Twitter handle. I like to do like two or three GIFs, you know, a week of guys posting all that stuff. You know, I'll post all the advanced numbers of guys that'll do all that. You know, whiff, you know, chase rate, that's all stuff that I completely nerd out about. But, you know, I usually post all the Twitter stuff. As soon as we get TrackMan, we will have a data analytic Twitter account. So that's coming in the future. But for now, it'll be on mine. But yeah.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much. And let's hope that the series against UNC Wilmington, which just got announced yesterday, I believe, they're supposed to play Central Arkansas. That series got canceled due to COVID issues. They were able to, I know, like you said, Josh was on like DEFCON 5 trying to find an opponent for the weekend. North Carolina Wilmington's coming to Stillwater still. So there is still baseball at Obrate this weekend. Long home stand still. Go to the stadium if you haven't. It's amazing. And we'll see how this series goes. Thanks a lot, man.
Yep, for sure. Go Pokes.
Go Pokes.